Do grab a seat. Do find a Bible near you if you can. It's page 861. We're carrying on a series. We're going section by section through Luke's Gospel. We've reached chapter 5 and verse 12. If we haven't met, my name's Andrew. I'm one of the pastors here. If we have met, I'm also called Andrew, and I'm still one of the pastors. So we're reading Luke chapter 5 and from verse 12. And it's also on the inside of your sheet, if that's easier. While Jesus was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. And he charged him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing, as Moses commanded, for a proof to them. But now even more, the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and to be healed of their infirmities. That he would withdraw to desolate places and pray. I want us to begin with this question. It's also on the inside of your sheets here. And the question is this: what is the heart of the human problem? And then I guess the follow-up question, once we've dealt with that one, is how can that problem be resolved? I guess there's all kinds of answers to that question in our society and across history. If you went back you asked, for example, the 18th century philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau that question, what's the heart of the human problem? He famously said, man is born free and everywhere he is in chains. I.e., he's saying that the problem with humanity is not really us. The problem is our society and the way it corrupts us and constrains us. And therefore, if you take that diagnosis, the solution is going to be basically Elsa's anthem from Frozen, if that means anything to you. It's let it go, here I stand, here I stay, I'm going to throw off societal expectations, I'm going to look inside, I'm going to find the real me, the authentic me, and then I'm going to make sure that nothing gets in the way of me expressing the real me. So it's a very modern outworking of that problem solution. If you ask that question to someone called Karl Marx, what's the heart of the human problem? He'd answer it differently. He'd say, well, the problem everywhere really is that the ruling class oppress the working class. And therefore the solution, you can guess where he's going with this, is a sort of communist style government with a redistribution of wealth and power to those who had been oppressed. So you take society and you flip it the other way really. And I guess whether we realize it or not, the way we live our lives shows us that all of us carry some sort of working definition of what we all think the problem in the world is, and therefore what we think will bring the solution about. So maybe for some of us, we think the big problem is low self-esteem. And if we think that, we will be working very hard to love ourselves and to help others to do the same. If we think the main problem is ignorance in our society, and you know that ignorance can lead to fear, and then it can lead us to demonize those unlike us, and therefore if that's what we think is the problem, we'll spend all our time trying to promote understanding so that we can have a more tolerant, unharmonious society. I guess all of us, what I'm saying is that we all operate with some kind of problem-solution framework, and if you looked at our lives, it would demonstrate probably what we think it is. And that's why this is such an important question for us today, to see whether our problem-solution framework is a deep enough and rich enough one to make sense. Now, today's passage we just had read, it was a short one, and actually the key bit of the passage is just two verses, verses 13 and 14, and it was pretty obvious, you could follow it straight away. It was about Jesus healing a leper. And I'm going to try and show us, really, that in these two verses, we get a brilliant and profound summary of the Bible's answer to those two questions. We get to see what is the heart of the human problem, and we get to see how it is that God has provided a solution to that problem in the person of Jesus. In fact, The main point we're going to be focusing on, and it's the middle point on your sheets from today's passage, is from those two verses. It's this one: Jesus can cleanse and restore us to the life that we were made for. So that's where we're headed. But before we get there, and that is really, I think, the whole summary of the Christian message. Before we see why that's the case, we're going to back up and we're actually going to spend the bulk of our time understanding the problem, the background, and what it is that leprosy represents in the Bible, and therefore why this incident is such a big deal. And we know it's a big deal. We know that because Jesus sends the ex-leper off to the priests at the headquarters in Jerusalem as a proof to them, in verse 14. Jesus knows that what he has just done is an extraordinary thing that carries within it a world-changing message, and he wants that message to go right to the hub of the capital. Anyway, this is the background that you and I need to understand, and this is the point we're going to spend some time on, is that sin, it's a short word, but that word sin is the Bible's answer to the question of what is wrong in the world. And specifically, leprosy is given to us in the Bible as an image to represent and help us understand what sin is. So let's get on to this first point. In particular, leprosy teaches us, and there's a lot of S's here, that sin spoils, spreads, separates, soils, and sticks. So I'm going to go through as relatively quickly as I can, some of what the Bible teaches us about sin as represented by this image of leprosy. When I was growing up, one of the probably the first time I encountered a kind of clear summary of what the Bible's whole message is was in a little booklet called Journey into Life. Some of us of a certain age will know this booklet. It was actually released in 1964. But it became very quickly the world's best-selling evangelistic booklet. It sold 30 million copies across the world. And it summarized the Bible's teaching by saying what we've been saying today, that the heart of the human problem is this thing called sin. And in the booklet, it defines sin as when we ignore that God is God. It's quite a good description of what sin is. It's living in God's world and ignoring the fact that God is God. And that the booklet said, it's when we say, I'm my own boss, it's my life, I can do what I like with it. That's how it defines sin. And then the booklet says that sin has three main features to it, and they are these: sin spoils, sin spreads, and sin separates. So firstly, it spoils our characters and our relationships, and the picture in the booklet was of an ink blot on a page, spoiling what humanity is meant to be. The next thing it said was that sin spreads, and it spreads across our own lives, it spreads across the world. And the picture in the booklet was weeds spreading across a garden. And then thirdly, it said that sin separates, i.e. it cuts us off from one another, and much more seriously, it cuts us off from the God who made us. And the picture you can see there is of sin cutting us off from our vertical relationship with God, and just like clouds cut us off from the sunshine. And you can just see the word sins in that cloud. Now, the reason I bring all this up is that this booklet was trying to kind of gather together the Bible's teaching on this subject of sin. But I'm going to suggest here that leprosy is a much, much stronger and more powerful image to illustrate sin, because it captures all of this teaching in one image, and it captures quite a lot else as well. The first thing we need to get clear before we kind of kick off is that the Old Testament law, this is the bit of the Bible written a millennium and a half before Jesus came, it was always designed by God to communicate spiritual truths to us, to get us ready for the coming of the Lord Jesus. And if you know that part of the Bible, it talks about a tabernacle, it talks about priests, it talks about sacrifices. And the point was that none of these things on their own could actually bring the spiritual reality that they pointed towards. But what they were there for was to be a big arrow to point us forward to what is to come when Jesus arrives. And in the same way, God gave us an image back in the Old Testament law, leprosy, and the whole point, it was meant to communicate what sin really was all about. So if in that culture you saw someone, you know, a leper with unclean sin, you were meant to think, that is a reminder to me of my unclean heart. And it was to teach us about what sin is like. And one of the things that leprosy teaches us, first of all, is that sin spoils, a bit like the Journey into Life booklet tells us. Unlike perhaps other diseases, if you had a disease of the pancreas, say, you could not know about it for a long time, it would remain hidden. One of the features of skin disease is that it's immediately obvious, it's disfiguring. You know straight away something's wrong. Instead of the body being like it was created to be, you can visibly spot something is not as it should be. A second thing leprosy communicates about sin, there is that sin spreads, like the booklet said. And I guess the word leprosy in the Bible, it wasn't a medical diagnosis. It probably covered what we would now consider lots of different skin complaints. And whether or not the precise skin condition was contagious, and many of them were, the law stated that the ritual uncleanness of these skin diseases spreads immediately. As in, you just need one touch, and then you consider the person you've touched as unclean as well. As soon as you come into contact with a leper, ritually speaking, both of you are unclean and to be treated as unclean. That's why the law stated, this is in the chapter before we just read, the leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head hang loose, and he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean. And the whole point is that this disease is to be considered as contagious. I don't know if when you're in a playground, this may be just my age, we used to play boy girls and girl germs. Boy germs and girl germs. And as soon as you touch someone, they were unclean like you were, and you try and get everyone unclean. But that was the image in the law. Just one touch and they are infected. There's not many people played that game, but you can kind of get the idea of it. The whole point, is this one touch. It just spreads and spreads. And this principle reminds me of a video that I had to watch. I was a medic back in the day, and as medical students, we had to watch this video on the first day on the wards. It was a massive anticlimax, 3 years of waiting before you get to see a real patient. And on the first day, they hold you back and they make you watch a video on hand washing. And it was deeply frustrating. And in the video, the doctor touches an infected patient, and immediately there is a bright green splodge on the screen. Somebody did it with a pen over the top. And that's the uncleanness. And then he touches the curtain around the bed. It goes bright green. And then they touch the notes, bright green. Then he touches, someone else touches the notes, and then both of them go and shake hands with another patient and then another, and green, 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 green. Within about 25 seconds, about a third of the screen is just bright, pulsating, radioactive, glowing green. And it's meant to kind of capture your imagination and say, look, wash your hands. And it is to show us that sin spreads and spreads and spreads. This is the Bible's picture right from the beginning. Sin kind of spreads down through every generation, never skips one. And it always spreads outwards across our world. It never skips a nation. It just spreads and spreads. And of course, this explains the world that you and I live in today. However the society is structured, this is true. Sin is in every human heart. And another thing that leprosy communicates about sin, not just that it spoils and that it spreads, but also the third one, like the booklet, that it separates. And the verse that, leading on from the one I just read about, the leper had to shout unclean, unclean, the next verse says this, Leviticus 13, he shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. This is verse 46. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. And this was to communicate that leprosy was a kind of living death. You were dead to your community. You could possibly live in a cave if you found a good cave, but you couldn't live anywhere near people. And symbolically, at least, you were dead to God. You were cut off from him. You couldn't approach God in worship. You were cut off. And lepers at that time would have had, no access to the synagogue or the temple, no visits to the market, no hugs from family and friends. And it was given to us as a picture of what sin does to humanity. Sin alienates us. It alienates us from God, most seriously. And it also alienates us from one another. It destroys trust and human relationships. And actually, leprosy communicates even more than the booklet, because leprosy also teaches us another thing about sin, which is that sin soils or stains. It makes us unclean. Now, in our reading, you probably noticed when the leper was asking for help, he didn't say, "Please heal me." He actually said something different. This was in verse 12. "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." The leper was to cry out, "Unclean, unclean," as he walked about. He would cover his upper lip, which I take it to be an image of shame and face covering, humiliation when you're dirty. And one of the things that leprosy did a brilliant job of communicating was this aspect of sin. And I guess we all know what we're talking about here, which is the fact that all sin leaves us feeling grubby. It leaves us feeling stained, and it leaves us feeling soiled. This guy, Mikhail Kalashnikov, he designed that rifle, the AK-47, and he died in December 2013, age 93. And 8 months before he died, he wrote a letter to the head of the Russian Orthodox Church. And it was all about his feelings of uncleanness. And in the letter, he said this: "The pain in my soul is unbearable, and there is one matter I cannot resolve. The longer I live, the more this question drills itself into my brain. Do I carry guilt for what I've done?" And it's not just designers of assault rifles who carry this sense of uncleanness and guilt around with them. And I guess we all know this is something all of us experience at some level. So this year, as every year actually, if you happen to be at the Ganges River on the right festival day, you will see literally millions of Hindus washing in that river, sometimes nearly as many as 30 million in one day. And you ask the question, why? Why do they do it? Well, they do it because they believe that getting into this water will cleanse them of their sins, and they long to feel that inner cleansing. Perhaps we have slightly different practices in this country, other strategies for trying to deal with this sense that we carry of uncleanness. An obvious one, I think, is just minimizing it. And we can do that by comparison. We comfort them ourselves, at least we're not as bad as them. Sometimes we do it by blame shifting. Well, it's not my problem, it's that the problem is really my family, or the problem is my ex, or the problem is, and you just fill in the blank, whoever I can pin the blame onto. Sometimes we do it through rationalizing. So we convince ourselves that this feeling I have of uncleanness, well, it's just the product of a primitive judgmental upbringing. And therefore, if I can convince myself that right and wrong don't really exist, perhaps through expensive counseling, then I can try and suppress that feeling for a little while. Or perhaps for some of us, you know, like Mikhail Kalashnikov, we try and find a priest or a therapist, someone in authority who can tell us everything's okay. You see, humanity has all these clever techniques, and they are all of them false solutions. You see, the reason we feel unclean is because of an objective fact that we are unclean before a holy God, because of our sin. And these false solutions will not help us. And finally, along with all these other messages that leprosy communicates about sin, the fifth and final one is that sin sticks. That is, that sin will not budge. It's incurable. All our attempts to wash it off will not work. It's significant that in Leviticus, and we just had that read, Leviticus 14, that these offerings that are to be made when someone, that these offerings are not to make someone healed. It was actually, if someone's been healed, this is what you do to mark that event. There's no way actually within the Old Testament law to get cleansed. And actually, there's no expectation in the law really that someone could be cleansed. So the priest's role in those days, it was much more like a public health inspector than like a modern doctor. So he got to determine if the person was infected, and he got to determine if by some chance they got cured. But there was no pretense that the priest or the whole temple system for that matter could actually do anything to cure the leper. That was beyond anything the law hoped to offer. And there's discussion, if you read about it in the literature, which particular modern diseases might have been incorporated under that biblical term of leprosy. And we don't know the definitive answer to that. But I think it's interesting, first of all, that the scriptures just assume that leprosy is curing someone of leprosy is something only God could do. You might know there's a famous passage in 2 Kings chapter 5, and this guy Naaman, the Assyrian general, he contracts leprosy, and he leaves his own country of Assyria because he hears that in Israel there's a true prophet of the true God, and he wonders whether just maybe that prophet might be able to help him. And he goes straight to the king of Israel, Jehoram, to ask about an introduction to the prophet and a possible healing. And the king, Jehoram, immediately tears his robes and he says this, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy?" And the whole point behind that statement is that leprosy is incurable. Do you see the point? It's like a resurrection. Curing someone of leprosy is something which only God could possibly do. It's like raising the dead. And of course, that makes sense in our reading of why Jesus sends the guy off to the priest in verse 14, because they will know this is completely unheard of. And that's why one verse beyond our passage, verse 17, we discover word has spread about Jesus. Messengers get sent to Jesus from Jerusalem, 80 miles away. And that's significant because that is Jerusalem's where the priest would be. He would be making the offerings for this man's cleansing. And the reason this news is such big news for them is because everyone knows that this cleansing can only be from God. Leprosy is humanly incurable. And if this is right, if this is what the Bible's teaching us, that leprosy cannot be cured by human means, I think it teaches us something extraordinary about God's law. And I just want us to think about this for a moment. That reading we had in Leviticus 14, there was a whole chapter actually. We just read the first 8 or 9 verses. And it's all about what to do if someone gets cured of leprosy. And I want you to have a bit of a heart now for the priests. So for hundreds of years, every new generation of priests, they would have to learn by heart, I guess, this chapter of the Bible, Leviticus 14, safe in the knowledge that for 99.99999% of them, this is something which could never, ever be relevant in their daily practice. You know, this would be the equivalent in vicar school of the vicar having to learn what prayers to say if, whilst you're conducting a funeral, the dead body gets up and starts walking around. You know, you think, oh, do I have to learn this? It may come up in the exam, but it's never going to come up in parish ministry. And these poor priests, you know, generation after generation, learning Leviticus 14. But they learnt it ready for Luke chapter 5. I want us just to dwell on what an extraordinary thing the Bible is. God was preparing us for hundreds of years for the arrival of the Lord Jesus and for this moment. So this has been a long first point, don't worry, the others are shorter. And we've seen all this stuff that leprosy communicates about what is the heart of the human problem. And we've got these 5 S's. It isn't some kind of challenge amongst preachers who can have most points beginning with the same letter. The reason I've put all this in here is just to show us that whilst the Bible's answer to what is the human problem is it sounds simple, doesn't it? Sin, one word. It's actually a very multifaceted and deep answer. And it's actually an answer which makes much better sense of the world that we observe than any of the false alternatives which we see today, which just don't go deep enough into what the heart of the human problem really is. So we've seen the background. Leprosy teaches us sin, spoil, spread, separate sores and sticks. And once we've got a grasp of that background, we're ready for the big punch when Jesus reveals his message. And the message is this, that Jesus wonderfully can cleanse us and restore us. So let's pick up from verse 12 of Luke 5. While Jesus was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. Luke's a doctor and he wants us to know that this guy was riddled with leprosy. This is a stubborn and hopeless case if ever there was one. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, Lord, if you will, if you want to, you can make me clean. So this guy is already flouting all the guidelines, isn't he? We all know because of COVID, you know, how people regard you if you flout guidelines. But this guy, as a leper, he should not be anywhere near the city, let alone coming right into the hub. This kind of communicates just the level of desperation that this guy has reached. But he's got a real trust in the Lord Jesus. Lord, if you want to, you can. I know you can. You have authority in your voice. And this guy knows there's no questioning Jesus' ability here. He just wants to know whether Jesus wants to cleanse him. And of course, Jesus could not be more willing. Jesus loves to help. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I want to be clean. And I just want to enter into this guy's sandals for a moment. You know, what would it have felt like all those years? He hadn't even had a human touch probably in years. Jesus doesn't rebuke him for breaking those guidelines. What does Jesus do? He comes close. And in that moment, he puts out his hand and he shows him the human touch of acceptance. It's a very powerful thing. And he feels that human skin next to his. And he feels the welcome that he's receiving. And at this point, all the crowd who are around would have, there'd be a sharp intake of breath everywhere. What is Jesus doing? Does Jesus not know about the Lord? Does he not know what, you know, uncleanness does when you touch it? It's going to pollute him. And then we read straight away, verse 13, and immediately the leprosy left him. And I want us to think about the visual spectacle the crowd got to see. You know, this guy just riddled with leprosy. You can see it a mile off. And then suddenly, in that moment, his skin is just fresh and clean. Perhaps digits grow back, I don't know. And he looks like a newborn baby. It's an image of being born again. And in that moment, something profound happened to this world, and hope was sown into a dark world. I want us to think about this globally. Up until now, the stain of sin has always gone in one direction. You know, since our first ancestors, with every new generation, every new territory, every new nation, sin has always gone in one direction. It spread, it spread, it spread, always in one direction. And now at last, for the first time in a world covered in all these radioactive green pulsating splurges, there is at last, at this moment, one spot of cleanness in this world. At last, something like, you know, heavenly bleach has crashed into and infected this world with cleanness. Jesus' contagious cleansing is more powerful than sin's contagious spread. That's the message here. Now at last, there is hope. There is the possibility in this dark world of cleansing. And what a moment this is. What a difference it's made to the history of the world. Jesus' cleansing really is stronger than any problem, any pollution in the human heart. And it's not just a moment of cleansing, it's also a moment of restoration. That's what I put on the sheets. And this guy, this leper's life, it will never be the same again. You know, that feeling he's carried around him of always feeling unclean, dirty, soiled. And now it's gone. And he feels clean again. Now that alienation, that separation from God, that separation from the human community, it's all gone. And he can at last start to live life as it was always supposed to be lived. A life in communion with the God who made him and with other people, God's people. So we began by asking that question, what's the heart of the human problem? How can it be solved? And although the Christian's answer to that is very simple, sin, and it can be solved by Jesus, it's not simplistic. I hope we can see that Jesus, the answer he gives us, well, first of what sin is like, is very profound and multifaceted. It does reflect the life that we, the world that we live. But I hope we can also see that the solution to it is very glorious. Jesus alone can bring things back to the way they should be. He can recreate this world to be how it was always intended to be, and yet much better. And I guess all of us know the reality that we're talking about today, of that feeling of uncleanness, because of our sin. And I want to encourage us to take responsibility for it. It's not because of our childhood. It's not because of something out there. It's because of something real and objective. We really are unclean by nature before a holy God. And now Jesus stands before each one of us, and wonderfully we discover he is not repelled by our stench. And he comes to each one of us and he reaches out in our uncleanness and he says, I am willing, be clean. And this offer is available to anyone, to every single one of us here who will just receive it, receive Jesus' words over us. Perhaps some of us in this room need it today, perhaps for the first time, perhaps for the 101st time. We need to hear those words spoken over us. Be clean, Jesus says. And finally, as we close, and this one will be briefer, there's one other key outbox from these verses, and I didn't want us to miss it, and it's the third one on the sheets. The outbox, this is what Jesus wants the world to know. So let's pick up from verse 14. And Jesus charged the ex-leper to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing at the temple, as Moses commanded, for a proof to them. The key thing to understand here is that Jesus isn't after fame and popularity as a mere healer. He can heal, he does heal, he's brilliant at it. But the reality is that there's such a high degree of Jesus mania at this time on account of Jesus' healings. It was actually starting to hinder what Jesus was trying to do. And by verse 16, we read that Jesus was having to withdraw to desolate places and pray. You know, perhaps he was just seeking relief from the crowds. Perhaps he was seeking spiritual protection, given the growing temptation to seek popular approval rather than following the mission that his father had given him. But the point is that suffering people naturally want healing. Of course they do. And Jesus has a big heart and he's willing to provide it here. But Jesus knows that what he has come to deliver is something much better, something deeper and more glorious, something which will ultimately lead him to the cross to die, as we read on in this gospel. Because Jesus is ambitious. And Jesus wants not simply to deal with the symptoms of this world's problems. He doesn't just want to deal with, you know, the sickness in front of him. Jesus actually came to do something much more profound. He came to deal with the root of the problem. He came to deal with sin once and for all. And this is the message that Jesus wants to get out there to the world. And what he's doing here is he's sending this ex-leper to the priests in Jerusalem so that they would immediately understand the significance of this moment and then hopefully receive him as the world's savior. And I want to suggest, therefore, the outbox for us must therefore be along the same lines. So, of course, Jesus brings all kinds of blessings into our lives. But the one he's excited about, the one he wants the world to know about, is that he is the one person who can heal us and cleanse us of sin and restore us to the life we were made for. And I want to ask, is that what we truly believe is the heart of the human problem? Is that what we think humanity's deepest need really is? Is this what we wake up thanking God for? If we're believers, is this what we treasure most when everything else in our lives is being shaken and blown around, but we know we have this treasure? Is this what we want most and work and pray towards for our family and our friends? Do we realize this is the deepest need that we have, that we might know cleansing and restoration? And if we are those like this ex-leper who have received what Jesus is offering, cleansing inside and restoration, then I guess our calling, our privilege actually, like this ex-leper, is to show it off. That's what he does, isn't he? You never guess what happened to me. He goes and reports it in Jerusalem. And he spreads the word about what Jesus has done and what he can therefore do for others. What a savior we have, and what a privilege to speak of him. I'm going to leave a bit of a break now. a time of quiet. There's some questions which might be of interest on the sheets, or just come quietly on your own before God. Perhaps even now in the quiet, reach out and ask for this cleansing and ask Jesus to reach out and give you what he can only give. And then in a moment, Fiona will come up and lead our prayers.